show of hands this morning when with the amount of people who actually are on Vendor Central, but again, a lot of interest maybe and opportunity there. So what we actually got now is actually four experts in Vendor Central. Martin Hubel is going to be the moderator of the panel. Martin actually was a senior manager for Amazon for over 5 years, and he was working with brands like PepsiCo, Mars, Nestle. But also on the panel of the experts, we have James Wakefield from Wake Commerce, Matt Anderson from Optimizon Group, and Bruno Ferreira from Blue Dot E-commerce. If I could invite all the ones up to the stage, then, and we'll bring the chairs up, and I will pass to Martin to moderate.
Martin Heubel. I'm an e-commerce consultant, particularly for first-party vendors on Amazon. And of course, we've heard today a lot about the challenging situation and obviously also the opportunities that we have as sellers and vendors to Amazon. And what we want to do in this panel today is to talk and really focus on the current situation in the wider market segment, what opportunities and challenges currently arise, and how brands like yourself can also foster their overall organizational skills, but also the more granular skill sets that are required in order to navigate on the Vendor Central model really effectively. Today, I have with me Matt Anderson, James Wakefield, and Bruno Ferreira, who will all be our experts, and I'm really looking forward to have you here. Do you want to say just one or two sentences about yourself, and then we're diving right in?
My name's Matt. I'm at Optimizon Group, formerly Marketplace Amp. We've just recently exited. I've been selling on Amazon Vendor and Seller for about 13, 14 years now, so it feels like a long time. But yeah, really interested to understand challenges about how brands are selling on Vendor.
Hi everyone, my name's James Wakefield, founder of Wake Commerce. We're a vendor-focused Amazon agency. I started selling on marketplaces around 2003, just went around my parents' house and looked at various belongings that I could list on eBay, then got a bit more sophisticated and then sort of got into the agency space around 2015. Sorry that we're discussing such a sexy topic at 4 p.m. on a Friday, but I'm sure we'll try and make it interesting for you.
Hi, I'm Bruno. I'm the founder of Blue Dot. Blue Dot focus 100% and exclusively to help vendors to align internally with all the requirements and compliances to supply Amazon through Vendor. And it's been an interesting journey. Before that, I managed for 7 years global vendor accounts from Mexico to India, whatever. I have friends everywhere.
Great. So we're definitely in with a lot of fun and a lot of expertise today in our panel. I mean, if you're becoming real for a second, this year has obviously been brought a lot of challenges on us. I mean, we have a very challenging economic situation. We have still elevated inflation rates that, of course, compress consumer shopping and also the disposable household income that shoppers are willing to spend on, especially when we are talking about marketplaces and discretionary categories like in grocery, in certain beer, wines, and spirits categories, for example, but also when we look at consumer electronics categories, where we need to come up with the right strategies to make our brands visible and do so profitably. And my first question to the panel, to all of you, would be, I mean, what are you seeing currently in your client landscape? What are really the challenges that a lot of brands are confronted with? And when you think about what brands should be doing, what is the gap to what they are actually doing and focusing on? So where could brands focus and hone in really into in order to make the most out of their Amazon operations?
I'll start. Okay, we're starting off with the graveyard shift, so I'll try and keep this entertaining. I think from a brand point of view, obviously inflation and cost price increases have been a big issue. But you know, as you always say, Martin, quite rightly, that Amazon is a price follower, not a price setter, as it were. So making sure that your channel conflict is the biggest issue I see with clients, you know, discounting products on Tesco's or whatever, losing the buy box, or Amazon wanting to seek additional funding for the products because of that. So not having a strategy for Amazon is basically one of the biggest pitfalls, really, basically, to make sure that actually you've got a focus, an exclusive range. You know, that from that point of view, I think that's one of the biggest mistakes I see from brands. Not having a strategy.
They are not focusing on it?
No strategy, no. Well, I think they think of Amazon as like a bricks and mortar retailer, and then they wonder why they can't just do like they're doing with everyone else. And it's a different game. It's a marketplace at the end of the day.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd kind of mirror Matt's points there, and I find that there's quite a lot of naivety around what Amazon actually is, and certainly how they do business. And you know, we've all learned a lot from you, Martin, in terms of how they operate at a kind of commercial, strategic level. But you know, when you're dealing with brands that are sort of lower in the chain, so you know, our clients are typically say 1 to 10 million revenue a year with Amazon. That there is quite a lot of ignorance around the structure and the business model, and there's incorrect presumptions made all the time. And I think that brands need to kind of take a step back sometimes and realize that they're not really controlling the narrative Amazon is. And often they'll get into situations where they just don't really know what to do, which is why it's always important to kind of seek the right advice. So the stuff that you talk around in, you know, negotiations, commercial agreements, that's where I think a lot of vendors can get unstuck and intimidated. So I think it's really important to understand the Amazon business model and get the right advice to deal with those kind of situations.
Okay, so it's about a missing strategy and then also not really understanding the Amazon business model so far. Bruno, do you have anything to add to it? Do you see something entirely different from your clients?
Well, I work mainly on the operational side within vendors, and I agree. I see they are not focusing in getting a proper strategy. They don't usually understand how vendor works. Sometimes they come from seller, and they think it's kind of the same. That's the first error. One of the advices I always give to my clients in the first meetings is stop blaming Amazon. Look inside, let's do an audit, let's review this. I usually start the conversation with an analogy that you guys know very well. If one of your best friends invites you to play a game of poker, and is a world champion of poker, and you never played poker in your life, you don't even know the rules, but you accept to play with him, what happens? You lose. Is it your fault or your best friend's fault? It's your fault. You accepted to play a game complex without knowing the rules. So what I see from brands, and it's growing, they kept getting frustrated and blaming Amazon for the things we know, chargeback, shortage claims. And what we do, what Blue Dot does, is to work with them internally to fix all of those things, and then allied with a proper strategy, things tend to improve very quickly.
Okay, great. And if you all think about probably two or three areas that brands can really start getting a better understanding of Amazon, but also creating a strategy that is more kind of related to what's happening in reality, in the realities of the world of selling on Amazon, what would you say should brands really prioritize? I mean, of course, the strategy is always an umbrella, but if you're becoming a little bit more specific and say, okay, what are the kind of key themes that brands need to obsess about in order to, of course, fuel their growth, stay relevant to end shoppers, and do so ideally profitably, What would you say is really critical there?
Well, I think first of all, Amazon sees vendors as partners. And in Jeff's words, they only want long-term partnerships. And I think brands are still struggling to understand that. They still see Amazon as a place they need to be, but a complex world that no one understands. Once again, it starts internally. It starts with their teams. I've seen some of my clients come to me and it's like, yeah, we have an amazing team. They were managing eBay. Well, it's not the same. They need training. Everything is different. Even the way you process the orders, the delivery window. A couple of weeks ago, I was working with a vendor that was receiving on-time compliance chargebacks because he was delivering on average 72 days earlier. He didn't even know that that specific date in the PO was to respect. So I think that it will help from my side. One of the points, brands should start seeing Amazon as a long-term partner because that's how Amazon sees them.
Anything to add from you?
I think just stop thinking of e-commerce like bricks and mortar from a FMCG point of view. Single packs, why consumers would want to buy products in singles on Amazon, for example, when they're going to be buying bulk or variety or gift packs, for example. So you can differentiate your range from typical bricks and mortar to the Amazon offering and then be able to manage the price hierarchy better and give Amazon that partnership. You know, they want margin, so be able to give the channel margin, fund that net PPM, and get Amazon on board. I had one client, it was a large cleaning company, which I won't mention them for the embarrassment, and forever losing their buy box, and Amazon wanting more and more terms, and they're saying, well, like, what can you guys do? I said, well, stop giving out your minimum order quantity at like £150, so you've got every single eBay garage salesperson selling your product. Stop giving massive bulk buy discounts to distributors because they're undercutting Amazon. And think about Amazon as a partner, like you say. What can you give them and try and protect that distribution chain? Otherwise, it's a nightmare. You're left with the Wild West with their parties and you can't control the channel.
Yeah, for sure, Matt. James, anything to add?
Just that there's many layers and complexity to trading on Amazon, whether that's seller or vendor. And it is quite difficult to, you know, wade through all the mud and really comprehend what you should be focusing on. For us, typically, the priority areas certainly have to be merchandising. So what we find with vendors in particular is that the listings are often quite weak in terms of keywords, branding, high quality imagery, all the rest of it. But that's just really one piece of the puzzle. You've got everything else like operations, PPC, channel control. So I don't have a simple answer to your question except to say that it is complex and you really do need to kind of look at the bigger picture and I think create goals and strategies to drive the channel forward. Otherwise, it'll just kind of stutter along. You'll continue to get frustrated. You won't get anywhere and new things will sort of come in the way.
Creep in. Yeah, so I think the themes are clear, right? So it's, first of all, understanding Amazon as a partner. We'll come to that in a second again. On the other end, of course, also to have the right strategies and tactics in place in order to navigate this online marketplace that can be quite complex to deal with. Now, when we're talking about understanding Amazon as a partner, the challenge that a lot of brands here also potentially sitting in the room have is that, of course, Amazon often doesn't picture themselves in the actions that they take on your or on the accounts of a seller or vendor as a partner. So we have, for vendors in particularly, the challenges around ASIN suppressions or manual delistings for profitability reasons, where sometimes not even a vendor manager is proactively reaching out and brands have to fix it through the back end or through the vendor service in Vendor Central. What are the things that you have found really impactful to improve the relationship with Amazon, also from your experience as an agency when you're supporting your clients? And what are also some best practices that brands should navigate towards when they see that their listings are suppressed? And what should they do?
Give them money. That's the best way to get Amazon interested, is what I found out, basically. Yeah, £1 million worth of advertising, that's a good way to get someone in front of you.
Fair, so you're saying ads and retail.
Joking aside is, if you're going to be giving margin and money to Amazon, is making sure that you have a measurable return on that, rather than just giving, you know, away percentages to this, you know, marketing budget, basically, which an opaque sort of percentage. You know, where is it going? What we can see in return. Yeah. So if there are levers that you can pull where you can see a return, like funding, subscribe, and save, for example, put your money there. Clearly, Amazon just wants your money, whether you're a consumer or a vendor. But you know, making sure you've got a measurable way of getting return in place. I think from just one last point about the catalogue element is the level of vendor support. I don't know. I'm being cynical here on a Friday, late on a Friday afternoon game. I think they're actually deliberately providing really bad service through vendor support, so you have to pay for AVS. This is something that I've noticed recently. Maybe I'm being cynical, but I don't know if anyone else has seen that.
Anyone else seeing this?
Well, I think we've learned to expect just about kind of experience across the board with any kind of interactions or touch points with Amazon. But in answer to your question, when you've got situations that need to be looked at, it's obviously really dependent on what kind of category your account is in terms of account support. So, you know, at the lowest level, you're essentially just dealing directly with vendor support. At the highest level, you know, you've potentially got the ear directly of a vendor manager. So you've kind of got to know what buttons to press and when. But from our experience, we have to file things through support ticket in the first instance and try and escalate them as much as we can before we then try and take it up a level. And to your other point, you know, distribution control and kind of channelization is just so critical. And vendors are typically brands who are in retail or grocery, FMCG, those kind of brands. So by virtue of that, their products are available in a lot of places, and that can cause some serious issues when it comes to Amazon, you know, following a price that you didn't even know your product was being sold at. And for some brands, they've kind of got that nailed, but for the majority, there's a lot of kind of leaks in their distribution, and it's actually quite hard to get on top of. But that's not really an Amazon account-based issue. That's a much wider business issue that needs...
deeply it's integrated into almost the distribution strategy of a brand.
Exactly, yeah.
Bruno, anything from your side?
Well, we know there's a few reasons that can get the ASIN suppressed. For me, I'll rather spend my time getting a proper training and learn how to avoid them to get suppressed. One of the reasons is Amazon doesn't work with MAP strategies, minimum advertising price. So when you go invited by Amazon to start supplying through vendor, just make that strategy. Don't go with the same products that you have a distributor in Germany, in France, one in UK, and you work with them for 10 years, you have special prices for them. Differentiate the catalog so that you avoid the price matching system. Going to crap, it's coming a lot of times from that price matching that then will cause the net PPM to reduce substantially, and Amazon will just go and say, okay, this is out. Well, let's keep in mind that when I say that we are Amazon partners, well, it's a weird partnership, right? It's like your best friend knowing
not
that
Amazon sympathizers.
Remember that it's your best friend inviting you to play poker, and he knows that you never played poker in your life. So Jeff Bezos said in a board meeting in 2004 that your margin is my opportunity. He will try to take everything he can in the form of shortage claim, chargebacks, whatever he can. Just know the rules of the game. So I would rather spend time training myself and my team how to not be so dependent on a vendor manager. That's one of the things that Blue Dot focus is to train professionals to be as less dependent as they can from a vendor manager. And I've been doing that for 7 years. And I don't need a vendor manager, really. Support team, I agree. They need to work on that. But one thing I've been noticing through the years is that the way that we speak to them it's a really good differentiator. I always start calling them my team. I always start a support case with, hi team, happy Friday, how's your week? Sometimes we forget that there's a human on the other side. And that human is receiving 150 emails a day. and they all are angry and asking for something. When they see an email that starts, "Hi team, how's your day?" Who do you think that person is going to prioritize? I have a high success rate on everything I dispute, and I truly believe is the way I speak with them. So yeah, if we can all start doing that, remember that. There's always a human on that side. There's no way analyzing emails from support team or dispute.
Yeah, I love that. Matt and James, this is probably more a question directed to you, but James, you also talked about really kind of developing products for the channel and potentially even just for Amazon as a customer. Mm-hmm. When you think about examples of brands that have done that really well, what do you think is really kind of an attribute of those products that are maybe exclusively available on Amazon or more specifically developed for Amazon that makes them unique? And have you seen also very great examples that you should consider as a brand when you are developing the A-plus content, A-plus premium content for it? Anything that sparks or springs to mind in this sense?
Well, we're just working with client Montagne Chenoux to do the Seven Heaven face mask, and they have single face masks available in Boots and Superdrug, and we're doing that. Well, something that worked really well for them previously is like gift packs, bumper packs, you know, thinking about gifting. But also we're building out like regimen, like for a monthly cycle, face care, those types of things. The products that you wouldn't see on the shelf in the other retailers, and providing that differentiation point is one key. The variety fun pack from Durex, that worked well. It was one of our clients. So anyway, I thought wake everyone up on a Friday. Yeah.
I think you've got to sort of understand the nailing the right price point when it comes, particularly when it comes to vendor, because if you're a grocery or FMCG client, nobody's going to make any money if you're selling something at £3 to £5. And historically, we've seen a lot of price sensitivity at that kind of price range. So you might have heard a CRAP being mentioned, which is actually an acronym for can't realise a profit. And that is sort of technical speak for a delisting. Amazon decides this isn't profitable enough for us, so we're going to stop buying it. Now, there's no sort of hard and fast rules to that, because you can never really judge when a product is going to become delisted, because if Amazon considers it strategic, they might actually run with it for a lower margin or even at a loss. And then in some cases, a product where they're clearly making profit can get sort of delisted. And the real price sensitivity tends to happen at this, was historically sub £5, but I would say now it's kind of sub £7. Because if you can imagine somebody's just purchasing one of that product, Amazon obviously has to deliver that to the customer. They're probably going to incur £3 to £4 worth of costs just to do that. And I've heard recently, actually, new vendor accounts, they're not interested in products that are priced less than £10. So that is a kind of policy change and a more outward statement to say, you know, we can't really tolerate these low price products anymore. So if you're going to do channelization, you need to find a kind of pack size that sort of hits the minimum, so that Amazon's going to make money, you're going to make money, but isn't prohibitive in terms of the price to, you know, discourage customers. So a 3-pack of oat milk instead of a 6-pack, for example. That was a bad example because that wouldn't be £10, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I get it. And I think what's also really critical here is, right, if you are having a very strong vendor-manager relationship, it can help to accelerate these pack sizes much faster. Yeah. Because once again, I think what we are seeing right now at Amazon is that they're shifting a lot of the resources from the internal Amazon organization and offshore them not only internally into other lower labor cost countries, such as Eastern Europe and India, but we are also seeing that Amazon is externalizing a lot of these capabilities, gives vendors more self-service tools in order to self-serve their account. But the challenge that often brands are then being asked also from their leadership teams are, why would we then go through a first-party vendor central account in the first place if we are having to self-serve a lot of this ourselves anyways? Wouldn't a third-party seller central account be easier? What are your opinions about this? What would you advise brands that are currently in the situation of thinking of switching either sides, so either from vendor to seller central or vice versa?
I would always advise any brand to go vendor. It's Amazon vendor is being an Amazon partner. It's a global window. If you know the rules of the game, let's call it like that, you'll succeed. Just look inside. Look at your team, the cross-functional team. That's what Blue Dot creates. And what I've seen working is that each one of these elements in this cross-functional team, someone from sales, someone from finance, and someone from logistics, once they are setting up, stretching their legs under the table, and they start connecting the dots, that's when things start to improve and happening. So I would always advise brands to go with vendor if they get an invitation, but please learn the rules of the game, and the book is thick. There's a lot of compliances, but I would advise them to be on vendor, yeah.
I wouldn't go quite as far as Bruno, because something that annoys me quite a lot is that you have certain experts in the space who will often say seller is better than vendor, and I do take exception to that, because my kind of mantra is that, well, it really depends on your business and your business model, and vendor is essentially a wholesale channel. It's suited to companies who are dealing with pallets, you know, bulk quantities, purchase orders. That is essentially what the channel fits into, if that's your kind of business model. But there's so many other nuances to it, you know, based on your category, the size of your product, the weight of your product. All of these things will influence the fee structure on the kind of seller central side. But the thing that I think often is underplayed is the fact that, yeah, Vendor Central is the strategic channel, because you've got a direct relationship, although it might not feel it all the time, you have got a direct relationship with Amazon, you're selling into them, there is a level of kind of hierarchy and management there, and they are strategically looking at brands that they want to partner with, typically the, you know, the biggest in particular product categories. So it's just a very different model to Seller Central. Seller Central is a kind of scalable, very much automated model where there's supposedly 6 million sellers globally. We were speaking to a prospect a few weeks ago who said they're on Seller Central, they're doing about 12 million a year, and we were just sort of thinking the level of complexity that must exist in the back end for them to be delivering that amount of goods and dealing with that amount of goods on Seller Central. And I just don't think Seller Central is suitable when you're hitting that sort of scale.
Okay, so a very extreme view, a little bit more of a balanced view here. Matt, how are you feeling about it?
I'm agnostic. I guess I'm sounds like a politician's answer, really. But if you've got very heavy products or very low-priced products, then, you know, vendor tends to be better suited from a P&L point of view. I think if you're looking at seller as a business, you need to be thinking, you know, e-com first, D2C first. And if you have the logistics, the finance, and the marketing team that's obviously thinking like that, then you know, seller is it can be more agile. You've got more API access. It's got more data you can pull out from it. You know, back in the day when I mentioned when we first started selling on vendor, you know, you could only get A+ content. You could only get access to AMG, which is now DSP. You could only get access to a human being. The lines are blurred between the two now. So, I mean, unless you're a huge vendor and you're doing sort of tens of millions and you've got that direct contact and you might be scaling a category with Amazon, that's great. You know, I've had clients like Sphero did the BB-8 droid, and they got on the, you know, the Black Friday page on Amazon. They were featured in the commercial over in the States. You know, when Amazon leans in, it leans in big, and you're not going to get that on seller. So you need to think about where you sit in the category.
All about the context and understanding, yep. Okay, where do you want to go, where are you standing right now, and how to get from point A to a point B. Okay, let's conclude a little bit around our thoughts around 2023, 2024 priorities. If you were to think about one key focus area that brands really need to double down, and I can anticipate Bruno's answer already, what would that be, and what is your super tip for brands for preparing 2024 plans as well?
Prepare. Go to meetings with a strong case, what happened in the previous 12 months, what do you want to do in the next 12 months. We've seen a lot of very good examples in the morning, how some different tools can help vendors and sellers the same. But in the vendor side, and from my experience, if you go really prepared to a negotiation with your vendor manager, you won't be as prepared as you are. And that's when things might start happening, like just show him the data, because the data came from his system. I've been into meetings where he said, where did you get that data? Well, from your system. Oh, I don't see that. Well, I don't know then. So my best advice is prepare. We saw really big changes in the beginning of this year on vendor. Amazon made once again the decision to cut ties with distributors and get close to manufacturers and brands. So for those that are still distributors and managing to be a vendor, take the opportunity and prepare, for me, is the best advice. Just know your business, know Amazon business, and just go with everything you can to a negotiation with Amazon.
Yeah, I'd obviously agree with all of that. And I'd also say on top of that, you know, just take the channel seriously. A lot of brands, companies think in financial years, but what we've seen historically with a lot of brands that we've worked with, Amazon was kind of irrelevant to their business maybe 5 years ago, and then typically if they're on vendor, they might have just fallen into it. You know, they've been invited, they've set up an account, and before they know it, it's kind of like £1 million a year, and they're like, oh wow, there's something going on here. So they need to really think ahead and think about where that account is going to be in 3, 5, 10 years time, and use that insight to then decide, okay, how am I going to resource that? And you're not going to resource it with one person who's got multiple responsibilities in the business. You really need to plan, you know, who's going to do what? Are there going to be agencies involved? And that is something that I would recommend, you know, not because of what I do, but genuinely because you can't realistically hire a full Amazon team unless you've got, you know, probably a couple of hundred grand spare on the payroll. So they really need to think about what the objectives are, what the long-term opportunities are, and plan for that and resource appropriately.
So preparation, resourcing properly. Matt, anything from you?
Well, a brand coverage program. I think basically looking at being able to export across the EU as a brand. Amazon's been looking at the B word, the Brexit, and how to sort of smooth that flow for brands. So I think there's a big opportunity. I'm seeing vendor managers being centralised and popping up in Spain and Italy and places like that rather than the UK. So I think, you know, just be aware of that Amazon's going to be looking at a centralised approach across Pan-EU because it's going to save overheads, no doubt, margin. So think of a Pan-EU approach. Thought for 2024.
Yeah, I think that is a big one because we're seeing really Amazon going massively into that direction. Okay, so hopefully we have a couple of minutes for a Q&A. I'm looking over here, so we do. Do we have a microphone to give into the audience? Or?
I think you might have some more, but I can always take one and run around. We've got some
Appreciate it. Okay, we have 1, 2, 3 questions for now. Let's see if we can answer all of them.
Amazon Business. As a vendor, is it all hype, or is it actually something that we should be taking more seriously than Amazon Retail, for example?
What is your objective?
Maximizing sales.
Then I.
What's your product category?
Building products.
Building products. I would say it's definitely an area of interest. Amazon's been quite, I think, aggressive in terms of growing that. You know, if you think back 10, 15 years, it was sort of Viking Direct was kind of the go-to for that, those kind of goods. But Martin, I think you've got a bit of insight into how that functions.
I mean, I think the one thing that is critical to understand is your products are very likely to be listed already on Amazon Business. So the question really here is, do you want to put fuel onto the fire in order to maximize the growth? I think there are two sides that you need to evaluate. On the one end, you can, of course, be active and work with your vendor manager during the annual vendor negotiation to invest in order to offer, for Amazon, to offer additional bulk discounts on top of your products if businesses are purchasing a larger bulk of your product on Amazon B2B. The intrinsic question that you need to ask yourself is how structured is your distribution control? Because if you're granting too much of a discount to B2B businesses or B2B clients, then those may be sellers that then resell your products at this discount towards an end shopper via Amazon Core, so the B2C platform. So it really depends on your ambitions, your internal distribution structure and control. And also, I would always advise to start first with really optimizing the content and fixing the basics, also for Amazon B2B, before you then put fuel onto the fire with additional discounts that may harm your brand perception long term.